Know the candidates? We're going to meet a candidate right now. Sandra Hoffman Kingston is running for House Seat 64. The incumbent there is Julie Alexander. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us about yourself.
I am a retired elementary principal. I live here in Jackson in Summit Township on rather foggy Vandercook Lake this morning. But beautiful. I retired from school administration a few years ago, and before that, I worked as a teacher. I was in Ypsilanti, and before that, I worked in law enforcement. I worked at the University of Michigan Department of Public Safety, and when my bachelor's was in criminal justice. My doctorate, my master's were in elementary education and educational leadership, metropolitan education specifically. And I grew up on my family's dairy farm. It's been in my family for five generations now. We still have the farm. We sold the herd when I was in college. It was my parents' goal that all three of their kids go to college, and we did. So, and we were the first generation of our family to finish college, so all three of us. So my parents
were pretty proud. Where was that farm at?
That's in Lapeer.
Lapeer.
Yep, Lapeer, Michigan. Yep, and we still have the land. We still have the buildings, most of them. And my mom passed away about 10 years ago. It was her family's farm. So, the woman's heritage. So when Dad married Mom, my grandma used to laugh that he was no farmer.
So I'm sure you've been asked, why are you doing this?
Why am I running for office?
Yeah.
Well, being in education and working in law enforcement, you know, ever since I started college for my bachelor's, I realized that there was a lot of problems in the criminal justice system. And it's related to the education system, because if the education system's functioning the way it should, then we shouldn't have a huge problem with the criminal justice system. Unfortunately, and specifically for the last few decades, the education system has really been under assault. The funding's been cut. Teachers, the working conditions have been going down, which means learning conditions have been going down. And it's gotten to the point where it's just not functioning anymore. So this past year, I was telling you earlier, I've had multiple back surgeries. So I've spent a lot of time healing and in bed and getting myself to be able to walk again, basically. When I was just starting to be able to get out a little bit more, I hobbled in with my cane to see a Gretchen Driscoll event, and I learned that there were several seats coming open in the area, including the House seat that Julie Alexander currently has. She's up for re-election, and nobody was running against her. And I asked several people that I talked to, well, are you going to run? No. Are you going to run? And with my cane in hand, I said, well, I guess I'll talk to you about doing it myself. And they were very excited about it. And the local Jackson Democratic Party's given me a lot of support. And I've had a lot of people reach out and give me a lot of support. But going into...
it's a big commitment, isn't it?
It is a very big commitment. And... I have a pretty strong work ethic, and that comes from the farm, I know. And so I'm okay with a challenge. I'm totally okay with it, and I like to be busy. So this has been it's been great to meet people in the community that I hadn't had an opportunity to meet before. It's been great to engage in conversations that I feel like we don't have often enough. I'm running because I felt like I had a duty to do it. I'm capable of doing it, and I feel like I'm a great candidate for the position. I feel like I'm very qualified and that I really care about people, and I'll do a good job because I'm doing it because I want to make things better. It's certainly not because I'm having a lot of fun going around and organizing, campaigning. But I really do feel like I could make
some
positive
changes. Well, you
got to
be passionate, though.
Passion is not something I lack.
Okay.
It's something that I have lots of. And, I care about the kids that I've worked with. I care about the parents that I've known. I care deeply about the teachers. And in our criminal justice system, we have some fantastic people working as police officers and corrections officers. They need more support, they need more training, and they also need additional services. There's a lot of times police officers are going to calls that social workers should be going to. And it's often the same in classrooms. We need more ancillary staff. We need more social workers. We need more nurses. We need more access to health care and mental health care as well. And this is for education issues and in criminal justice.
But with the pandemic, there's going to be less money.
Well, there's less money for most of us, but some of us, there's a lot of extra money. And the folks at the very, very top of the food chain economically are really making a lot of money right now, and they're not getting taxed for it. And so that money is coming out of our economy and going into their pockets. You know, there's a couple different ways to think about the economy. One is to look at GDP in the stock market, which is really a measure of how well the wealthiest people are doing, because only 20% of Americans are part of the stock market, own stocks. I mean, just 20%. And out of that 20%, it's this even smaller percentage that is significantly involved in it. The rest of us, the economy is involved. You measure the economy on how many people are employed and how able they are to pay their bills. And right now, we live in a time where people are going paycheck to paycheck, those of us who are still lucky enough to have paychecks. And it's very difficult. People are working multiple part-time jobs, and they still don't have health care because the employers aren't offering health care to part-time jobs, and that's why they're only offering part-time jobs, because the health care is expensive to pay for. So there's money out there. It's just not in the hands of most of us. It's in the hands of a very, very few of us.
So you're not really going door-to-door. I think most of the candidates are not going door to door, but I know you're talking to a lot of voters. What are they? What are their chief concerns?
The chief concerns are making things better and getting action taken. What I've heard mostly in the community, and strangely enough, some of my most enthusiastic supporters and volunteers are former Julie Alexander supporters, and I think. I know they've told me the problem is that she's a good listener, and she listens. But as far as taking action for her constituents, it's been lacking. Now she says otherwise, but that's if you look at her record, if you really look online at her voting record, if you go to the legislative website and you look at the things that she's voted yay or nay on, she's been voting on things that support the NRA. She's supported purchasing stun guns legal. She's supported putting a commission together, which sounds like a good thing, to monitor the environment. However, the people that she's and the other people working with her on this have put on the commission are the actual people doing the polluting, which is like putting the fox in the hen house. So, and in the meantime, they've been defunding. You know, people talk about defunding the police right now. It's like the current legislation in legislators in Lansing under Republican control have been defunding the police for the last 10, 15 years, which is part of the problem that we're having, because our police officers keep getting less and less and less training, because they have less and less and less funding, and they can't function like that. It's a difficult job. It's a complicated job. It's a dangerous job, and they have to be prepared for it, because it's not about, you know, some of the guys, when I was in my 20s and I worked in law enforcement, you know, I went into it because I wanted to help people. A lot of the guys went into it because they wanted to drive fast and carry guns. And that's part of it, but really your first question when you get on the scene somewhere is, what can I do to help? And you have to have your training to make sure that you understand how to calm yourself, how to look at the situation clearly, and evaluate what you need to do. And if you need to bring in additional supports, you bring them in. So right now, we're dealing with the effects of defunding that's already been happening. So really, we need to fund it differently. We need to reimagine it, and we need to do it better. If we had more money, we would do more community-based policing, which is what the research shows in criminology is the most effective way to police.
So same thing for education?
Same thing for education.
Funding is
funding is a big part of the problem.
Our rank is not good.
Yeah, our rank is terrible. But that's just part of the problem. That's just a small part of the picture. They've done things like there was a big deal when the lottery was. They decided to use the lottery funds for education, but it was a sham. It is a sham because what that's called is supplanting. So they took the money in from lottery, but then other monies that were coming in from other sources, they moved to other things outside of education. So it wasn't additional money, they just replaced it. So that they made a big deal about
shell game.
Yeah, it was a shell game, exactly. And then the other problem we have, charter schools. Charter schools were a great idea when they first came out. One of the biggest supporters of charter schools, you know, 20, 25 years ago when they first started talking about them was actually the head of the MEA. And I apologize, I can't remember his name. But the idea was that you have professional teachers, and teachers are professionals. Most of the teachers I've worked with have had master's degrees. And you allow them to explore what they think is going to be most effective in the classroom. So the original idea for charter schools was that teachers would be in charge of these new schools that would be on the cutting edge of learning experimentation. But that's not what happened. What happened was is that people started coming in thinking, oh, look at all the money in the school aid fund. I bet we can make profit off this. And so now, currently, we have a system that really siphons millions of dollars away from public schools, and there's no replacement for those money, for that money, and it's going to for-profit charters. And here's the problem: you know, I've worked in a lot of schools, and sadly, I've worked in a lot of schools that have been closed because of consolidations. I can't tell you, you know, multiple times that I've had to work with families and communities and deal with the closing of an elementary school, and that's just a heartbreak for a community. But the charter schools, you see, when you do a school budget, and I've done Title I budgets for all the schools that I've worked with, you have to go to the penny. I mean, accountability is a big thing in education. There's a form for everything. Everything has a line. Everything has to have a dot and a T crossed and everything. And so you get very good at that. And what I've learned is that there's not enough money in education to run the schools as it is. So I don't know how anybody thinks that you're going to be able to run a school in a good way, in an effective way, and be able to make money from that. So somewhere they're making cuts, and it's not in their profits. It's in the services that are coming to the children. Because I tell you, even when you get the Title I funds, there's not enough money to do the job the way that we need to do it. So knowing that, and I do know that, charter schools that are making profit, the ones that are getting hurt are the kids.
So they're shortcutting?
They're shortcutting.
Is that fair to say?
They're shortcutting. The teachers that work there, I've as an administrator, as a principal, I've interviewed a lot of teachers to come on board. And whenever I've had one coming from a charter school, and I've actually hired them, there's tears of joy.
Yeah.
Because they know that they're going to get benefits. They know that they're going to have a retirement plan set up, and they didn't have that before. And, you know, there's just safeguards working in a public system that you don't have working in a charter. And teachers need that. They deserve that.
Well, you had an eye-opener because you got a chance for, let's say, a semester to work in the Detroit public schools.
Yeah. Well, I taught.
Relay that message.
Sure. Well, I taught in the Ypsilanti public schools, and that was pretty interesting. I also was a principal in Wayne County. I worked at Wayne Westland Community Schools. And when I started to get my doctorate, it was in metropolitan education. It used to be called urban ed, but they changed it to metropolitan education. It was at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. And I worked with a lot of teachers. I had colleagues, fellow doctorate students, and they worked in the Detroit system. And when I retired a few years ago from being principal, I decided I want to check it out. And I knew that they needed people. And I had spent some time locally doing some substitute teaching just to help out because I know that they're short. And so I took a position there. And the conditions were as bad as I thought they were, worse in some cases. I mean, the floor in the gym and the cafeteria was heaving up. They had big barriers around it, and apparently it had been like that for over 10 years. The water fountains were closed off because there was the kids told me there was lead in it. The adults never talked about it, but the custodians carried big jugs of water up and down the stairs. And that's what the kids got their water from. It was not a clean building. The classroom that I was assigned to had the ceiling falling in and part of the wall falling in. And it was a very old building, so I imagine there weren't good things in that paint and wall. And, you know, when you work with kids in that live in poverty, you know, they have a lot more needs, because they're not getting the things at home because they don't have the resources at home to get them. And one of those things was food. The first thing that we did when the kids got to school was we made sure there was food available. And the kids were hungry. And they had their lunch and they had a snack. And before they left in the afternoon, there was more food brought in. And the kids would load up on apples or bananas or whatever it was that they had. And some of them, I'm pretty sure that was all they had to eat for the rest of the day. And it's really hard. Then you had kids that would be sleeping during the day because they didn't sleep at night. And you had kids that had chronic problems, kids with bad teeth and just in pain from that and not being taken care of. And so it's a really hard thing. And
almost really an impossible scenario.
Well, it's
to educate.
No, not impossible, but very, very hard. You know, the biggest problem, and I've said this for years and years, the biggest problem with the problem in education is that it's not an education problem. It's a social services problem. And we don't fund our social services the way that we need to. And I don't just mean social services like protective services. I'm talking about social services like having nurses, like having social workers, like having therapists. We just need to provide for the kids better, and we need to do it earlier. I know that there's a lot of controversy concerning abortion, as there should be. Abortion's a terrible thing. I am pro-choice, but I am not pro-abortion. I'm pro-life in that I believe that if a child is born, and I'll put on my American cap right now, in our country, there should be a minimum bar. And no American child should live below that bar. And right now that bar is too low. It's way too low. We need to raise it. Because when a child is born, we need to be able to, that child needs to be able to live in a situation where they have a parent that's able to be with them and take care of them, not running from one part-time job to the other, which, by the way, doesn't pay for child care, doesn't pay for food, doesn't pay for rent. It doesn't get health care at all. So what we need to do is we need to put systems in place to support children when they're born and to support the young families. Because we've had, I think in Michigan, I saw something, it was over 20,000 abortions that had happened. And many of them were in urban areas here in Michigan. You know, what do we do to make that so it doesn't happen anymore? What do we do to create a situation where women don't have to seek an abortion? What do we need to put in place? Because that would probably be a better idea. And if we put in place something that if a woman chooses to have the baby that she knows she's going to have supports, perhaps there'd be less abortions that way too. Because if a woman knows that she's going to be assigned to poverty, and once you're in poverty and you have a child, it doesn't get better. It gets worse. And people know that. So if we fix that situation, I'm not saying rewarding people for getting pregnant, because I know that's what some people think that sounds like. But no, it's about taking care of the children. It's about taking care of the children. We can't take care of the children unless we make sure that their parents have certain things taken care of, too. So I believe in supporting our babies and our young children. And early childhood education is important. But again, as soon as a baby's conceived, we have to start taking care of the child, because there's all sorts of things that can affect it. Kids that live in poverty are more likely to be affected by exposed to carcinogens, arsenic, lead in the water. But there's a lot of other things, too. And it's not just urban, it's rural. I mean, here in Jackson County, we have a PFAS problem. If you look at the Eagle website, there's a big red dot right in the middle of Jackson for PFAS contamination. And we don't know enough about it because the agency's been so underfunded, we don't know how that's affecting the kids. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do to make sure that we're living up to the expectation to being a good, a country that is a good parenting country.
Environment, is that a big issue for you?
Environment is a huge issue for me. Growing up on the farm, you know, you get out of the land what you put into it. And if you keep taking out of it, it's going to dry up. It won't be viable. You know, right now we have a lot of problems with chemical companies running the farming show. And what they're doing is we're overusing pesticides. I mean, it's killing the pests that are eating the crops, but it's also killing the pollinators. We're putting in things in the soil to make the seeds grow better, but it's killing the living bacteria that's in the soil that makes soil healthy. I mean, soil is a living thing. You know, a field of a good field of soil, of earth, has enough microbes in it, bacteria in it, should be the weight of about an elephant for about an acre of land. Think about that. I mean, these are just the itty-bitty little things that live in the dirt that, you know, make it soil.
Mm-hmm.
And we're killing them. And once those are dead, the soil doesn't grow things anymore because it's just dirt and it's no longer soil. So soil health is a really big deal and we don't talk enough about it. I think we have some local farmers here, and I've talked to a few of them in Jackson County. And I think I grew up with this attitude, and I think the small farmers have this attitude that we have a responsibility to be stewards of the land and to leave it in a better condition than when we found it. And with the current way that our agriculture system is running right now, that's not what's happening. We're not taking soil health into consideration. And we need to have more small farmers with that attitude taking that back, because, you know, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, my grandmother's, it was all about making the land better and keeping it the way that it's supposed to be, because obviously it's been in my family for five. If you count my great-nephew, my sister's grandchildren, it's seven generations it's been in our family. So there's a lot of responsibility. If we start thinking about the land as ours, as we should, because it is all of ours, then we would do a better job.
So you have just a little over 3 weeks to go here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an exciting time. We've spent a lot of time doing Zoom meetings. I've met a lot of people that way. Honestly, COVID campaigning actually worked out really well with my back, because staying at home and being on a Zoom meeting is actually far easier than traveling. And with my age and vision, I would rather not drive at night. So the Zoom meetings are working out great. We have had a couple of live events, and it's been wonderful to get out and meet people.
But somebody has a question for you. What should they do?
My website is www.alexsandra.com. You can contact me through that. You can also email me. My email address is sandrahoffmankingston@gmail.com. There's just one F in Hoffman. Those are the best ways to get hold of me. And I would love it if people reached out and asked questions, because that's what I'm here for. You know, if I do get elected, which I truly, truly hope I do, there's a lot of things that we need to put into action right now. We have to have conversations to make good decisions about what needs to happen. There's a lot of different things going on with criminology, in criminal justice. There's a problem with cash bail. There's a problem with our prison population. And back to the schools, we have a problem with the schools population. If we keep closing schools, maybe if we open more schools, we could close more prisons, you know? So we need to think comprehensively about how to address all of these problems in a way that makes sense and in a way that we feel is the right thing to do for our countrymen and countrywomen around us.
Give us your website again.
www.electsandra.com.
Thanks, Sandra. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.